Okay, we are in the midst of a study on Christian stewardship, I think, as you know. And as what we're doing in this study of Christian stewardship, as you know, is there's a rotation of teachers that are coming through. And so you've had the opportunity to hear probably four or five different teachers, and they're gonna come back through again, and you'll hear them again a second time. But the idea is interesting that we're dividing the congregation by age. And so we have those who are younger in here, those who are older in the other classes. What? Just seeing if you're paying attention. Amy's laying down over there, so I thought maybe the rest of you, be reclining. But we're dividing by age to try to help enhance our time together and the specific applications we can make through this study. But Christian stewardship is the whole idea of stewardship is something we need to study, something we need to think about. The Bible says a lot about this. The fact in those first few lessons that we've already had talked about the fact that everything belongs to God, and we need to be reminded of that. Not just everything, but every one of us. We belong to God. We're not our own. And so we need to look at our own lives and see how can I use my talent, my time, the things that God's given me for the Lord. They're not for me to simply enjoy for me. They're for me to use for Him in every way I can. And so in this study of stewardship, what we want to do today is look back at the Old Testament and look back at what was giving like during the Jewish age? And you might look at that and say, what in the world does that have to do with us? What does that have to do with me? I'm not a Jew. I'm not living under the Jewish age. I'm not living under the Old Testament. What does that have to do with me? Well, see if you can help me with this verse. In Romans 15, verse 4, it says, those things that were written aforetime, back in the Old Testament, those things that were written aforetime were written for our... Oh, there's something for us to learn. And if there's something for us to learn, is there something for us to apply from what we learn? We're not under that old law anymore, but are there things that we can still come and learn and take and adapt and put into our lives just as they were back then? Well, hopefully. That God had a relationship with His people back then. God has a relationship with us today. Can you learn anything from anybody else's relationship with anybody? Did you learn anything from marriage, from other people's marriages, and maybe apply it to your own marriage? Or maybe you learned something from somebody else's marriage and said, I don't want that. In my, you look at situations, you look at relationships, and you learn from them. And so if we can look back at the Old Testament, say, let's look at the relationship between God and His people, and is there any application that that can have to me? So, in the Old Testament, there was the matter of giving of tithes. And that's what we're going to just, before we even look at the Jews this morning, I just want to look at this history of What is a tithe anyway?
Tenth.
A tenth. That's what the word means.
10% of everything, not just your money.
Yes. A tithe meant 10%. It wasn't just talking about money, as we're going to see. It was talking about everything that you had. We think a tenth, and we just think, okay, let's go to our bank account and see what's there, and we'll draw 10% from that. But that's You could say that's what the Jews did, but their bank account included everything, all that they had. But when we come back to the Old Testament, we read about a tithe. What we need to think about, and I think it's what we all know, and that is that there was a tenth that was given. Now, when did they start giving a tenth? When did God's people start giving a tenth? Now, I don't want you to answer that out loud. We think about the Jews and the fact that the Jews gave a tithe, that the Jews gave 10%, but is that when it started?
Abraham.
Yes, okay. So go to Genesis chapter 14. As you're turning to Genesis chapter 14, what's interesting is that before you ever get to the Jewish nation, before you ever get to the Mosaic law, people were already giving a tenth. And just historically, as you're turning to Genesis 14, we'll look at that in just a minute. Historically, other people were giving a tenth. Back in history, if you look back in history, you'll find out that the Babylonians were giving a tenth to their gods. Not to the God of heaven, but to their gods. You go back in history and you look at the Persians. They gave a tenth to their gods. You go back and look at the Egyptians. The Egyptians. Now, you think about the Egyptians. Where were the Jews before they became a great nation? Were they down in Egypt? And so the Jews, before they became a great nation, were down in Egypt. And history tells us that even the Egyptians gave a tenth. They gave a tithe to their gods. And history tells us that the Egyptians gave to their gods before they ever gave to themselves. Isn't that an interesting concept? They gave to their gods before they ever gave to themselves. So when they pulled this tenth off to give to their gods, they made sure that was the first tenth, apparently. And that tenth included their cattle, included their slaves, it included various precious metals. And then we, as you go down through history, you see the Romans did it, the Greeks did it. We don't think about that. We usually think about, well, this was something that God's people did. Well, it is something that God's people did. But somehow, it became something that other people did. Connie?
Did they do it daily or monthly or yearly? A tenth? Was it?
With the other nations?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was, I don't know the frequency on it.
The frequency of the Jews, always on the
Sabbath. Right. The Jews had a particular time frame. Let me look at that when we get over and talk about the Jews, because they did theirs at different frequencies. And when I say different frequencies, there were different times when they would give different tithes. They had multiple tithes. What we'll see with the Jews is they didn't have just one tithe, but they had multiple tithes that they would give. But look in Genesis 14. We're not going to dwell here. But this is the first time we read about this. And Genesis 14 is where Lot was taken captive. You may remember the battle that took place in Genesis chapter 14 and how Abraham went to rescue his nephew Lot in about verses 13 and 14 of Genesis 14. He goes to rescue him, basically takes his own army. Abraham armed his 318 servants in verse 14, took them to rescue Lot. And verse 16 says he brought back all the goods after he had attacked the enemy and conquered them. He brought back all of the goods. Verse 16, brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as women and the people. Verse 17, the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Sheba, that is the king's valley, after his return of the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him. Then Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And he gave him a tithe of all. Abraham gave a tithe to Melchizedek, king of Salem. First time we read about this. Where did Abraham get that idea? Is this just something he made up? Oh, you know, you're a nice guy. You're a king. I'll give you a tenth. If we were to look over in Genesis 28 at the vow that Jacob makes in Genesis 28, he vows to give a tithe. So where is this coming from? You know, it's not just a Jewish thing. We're going to look at that in just a minute. Not just a Jewish thing, but here was something that was being done by other nations, and here was something that was being done by Abraham. And it mentions this in Genesis 14 as if it was just common practice. Think about it. It doesn't stop to define the tithe. It doesn't stop to explain this. It just says that he did it. Like it was just a normal thing then. You think it was? When did this start? Is it possible that all of this began with Adam? We don't read about tithing with Adam. Is it possible that it started all the way back at the beginning with Adam? Where would the Egyptians get... Where would all of these other nations... Why would they all be practicing a tithe? Did man have a common beginning? You know, and if it began with Adam, if it began at the very beginning that God's people were expected to give a tithe back to God, then when you get to Genesis chapter 11 and you have the Tower of Babel and the confusing of the languages and the people are scattered, well, the people were scattered and went all their various different ways, but were there some things that stuck with them? Well, there's probably a lot of things that stuck with them. And perhaps one of the things that stuck with them was this idea of giving a tithe. And so, now, are we supposed to give a tithe today? Is that what God expects of us? We don't live under a law today. We don't live under the law that requires us to give. Now, remember what tithe is. We're not using the word tithe in a general sense, the way some people would just use that word to talk about giving money. Tithe means specifically a tenth part. So, are we to give a tithe today? Are we supposed to give a tenth today? We don't live under a law today. We don't live under a divine law today that requires us to give a tenth. But it's interesting to go back and look at the history of this, that from the very beginning, apparently, God was looking to his people to give a tenth to him. Is there anything for us to learn there? Anything for us to apply from that? Now, let's go and talk about the Jews, because that's really the focus of what we're doing today. And I don't want to stick here for very long, but I know there are a number of jokes out there about Jews and their money. Those jokes don't come from the Bible. The Jews in the Bible, the Jews in the Old Testament, were liberal givers. They gave a lot. And so when we think about Jews and their money, we need to think about what did the Jews do in the Old Testament? And what we see in the Old Testament is that there were about three main tithes that the Jews gave. Let's look at these briefly. We won't dwell on them. Look in Leviticus chapter 27, last chapter of the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 27, we're going to read about the first tithe, which was sometimes called the Levitical tithe, sometimes called the priestly tithe. And the reason was because of who that tithe was given to. We won't read all of these verses. We'll just look in verse 30. Primarily in Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 30, it says, "And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the land, that tithe is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord." Now, if we were to back up here in the book of Leviticus, if we were to go forward a little bit into the book of Numbers, they were to bring, God's people were to bring it, the Jews, let's be specific, the Jews were to bring a tithe. Now, who are they supposed to give it to? Where were they supposed to bring it? They're supposed to bring it and give it to the Levites. Look over in Numbers chapter 18. Go to the next book. You're in Leviticus. Go to Numbers chapter 18. And remember this about the Levites. Numbers chapter 18 and verse 20. Numbers 18 and verse 20. "The Lord said to Aaron..." Is Aaron an important figure in the priestly system of the Old Testament? Yes. "You shall have," here's what God says to Aaron, "you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they performed, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Hereafter, the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting. They shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout their generations that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. What's God saying to the Levites? When you go into the promised land, how much land are you going to get? Well, let's see. Judah's going to have their land, and Benjamin's going to have their land, and all the other tribes are going to have their land, and Levi's going to be like, what do we get?
Money.
You don't get any land. Well, that stinks. We're the Levites. We're the ones who, we stood aside for the Lord. When nobody else would stand for the Lord, we stood for the Lord. Now we're going to the land, and we don't get any land. Why don't we get any land? Because God has set you apart. What's your purpose as a Levite? Your purpose is to serve at the tabernacle. Is God going to take care of you? Oh, absolutely. What's happening with these tithes? This 10% that all the other tribes bring, what's happening with that? It's being brought to the Levites. It's being given to the Levites in order that the Levites might be taken care of. And I didn't put these other verses up there so that you could see these. But so everybody's being taken care of as God designed them to be taken care of. And if you go back to Leviticus, if you've got your finger there, I don't know. This is an interesting part in those closing verses of Leviticus, chapter 27, verse 32. Concerning the tithe of the herd or the flock of whatever passes under the rod, the tenth one shall be holy to the Lord. So it wasn't just that they opened up their billfold and they gave 10% of whatever was in there. It wasn't that they got their checkbook out and they gave 10%. They gave 10% of everything, including from their flocks and from their herds. And what they would do, just as that verse says, is that they would, the Jews would bring their flocks and their herds, and they would pass under a rod. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that one goes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that one goes. And so every tenth one, the tenth, the tithe, was given to the Levites, was given to the Lord. Now look at the next verse in verse 33. He shall not inquire whether it is good or bad. Wait a minute, that was my best one. Oh no, not that one. Oh yeah, you can have, I don't want that one. He shall not inquire whether it is good or bad, nor shall he exchange it. Oh, not that one. Take that one instead. Nor shall he exchange it. And if he exchanges it all, I've got to have that one, then both it and the one exchanged for it shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. So you want to exchange it? Great. I'll give you this one for that one. Perfect. God gets both of them. Interesting way to deal with that. But when you think about this matter of tithing, everything was a part of this. Everything was given as a part of this Levitical priestly tithe. But go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. In Deuteronomy 14, we read about a different tithe. We're reading about a second tithe. What do you mean a second tithe? I've already given 10%. You mean there's another 10%? Well, Deuteronomy chapter 14. You read about what's sometimes called by individuals a festival tithe. The Bible doesn't call it this, but notice how this one's described a little differently because it's a different tithe. Verse 22, Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain and of your new wine and of your oil, of the firstborn of your herds and of your flocks. Why are we doing this tithe? That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. So here was a tithe that was made and given wherever the Lord chooses his name to abide. Well, where ultimately for the Jews? Ultimately, where did that happen? What city did God choose ultimately for his name to abide for the Jews? In Jerusalem. And so they would be responsible for making yearly treks to the city of Jerusalem and there bring this tithe with them. And when they arrived there, interestingly, in verse 23, they were to partake of this tithe. Now, not just them. Look down at verse 27, lest we forget who else was supposed to be there. Verse 27, you shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. So here was a tithe that they were to take to Jerusalem or wherever the Lord at that time had made his name to dwell. They were to take that tithe there with them. And when they arrived there, they were to eat it, to consume it when they arrived, and also the Levite with them. Verse 24 says, but if the journey is too long for you, if you live in West Palm Beach and you've got to take this tithe all the way to St. Louis, if you've got to get all the way to Jerusalem, and that's, if that journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe, you know, for you, you carry a check. You carry some cash. You're able to do that. What if your tithe that you were going to give to God included, oh, let's say, 1,000 sheep? What are you going to do then? You're just going to load them up in your U-Haul and take them off? Are you going to, what? Well, God gives a contingency plan here. Or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand. Go to the place where the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend, when you get there, where you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. Well, wait a minute, is that just for you? You get to do whatever you want with it? No. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. What an interesting tithe that you were to take. Now, is this a fair question? Could you eat 10% of everything that you have? Some of you probably shouldn't say yes and just say no. I mean, could you eat 10%? I mean, forget just 10% of everything you have. Just think about 10% of the food in your house. Could you go home today, maybe you don't want to answer this out loud, and eat 10% of the food that's in your house right? Well, no. But that's just what's in your house. What if you had flocks and herds? What if you had grain? What if you had fields? And a tenth of that was to be. So when you think about this eating and partaking, were they eating all of it themselves? No. And so this was for others as well, but especially, don't forget verse 27, that this tithe was also to be for and include the Levites. But here's a second tithe that they were supposed to give. Now, go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. Because then in Deuteronomy 14, there is another tithe. Those first two were annual tithes. They did them once a year. This tithe, later on in chapter 14, down in verse 28, is every third year. Sometimes called the poor tithe. The Levite, that's verse 29. Verse 28, at the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, that's key, may come and eat and be satisfied. Well, why are we doing this tithe? That the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. So we've had one tithe that they were to offer that was called the priestly, the Levitical tithe. We've had that other tithe, the festival tithe, that they would do once a year and go and partake of it even themselves in Jerusalem. And now here's a tithe that they do every third year. That's particularly for the poor, the fatherless, the widows, those who would be in need. But notice that it says who are within your gates. This wasn't those who were in need in some other city. This was for those who were in need in your city, that they were to lay it up every third year so that they would know, or so that the Lord would be able to bless them. Are these the same tithe? You've got tithe. Wow. Did the Jews give 10%? Or did they give more than 10%? They gave more than 10%. Is there anything for us to glean from that? That God called upon them to gather everything that they, all of their possessions, and to use whatever they had for Him, but He always looked at that as belonging to Him, and that what they were doing was giving back to Him what already belonged to Him. But if you look back at Abraham giving a tithe, he gave 10%. You look at the Jews, did the Jews give a tithe? Yes, but more than one. Now, was this all that they gave? Well, there were other offerings. Look in Leviticus chapter 19. You have these tithes that were made, but then there were other offerings and other things by which they were to give of what they had. Look in Leviticus chapter 19, and you will know this. Verse 9, he says, when you reap the harvest of your land, if you're a landowner, you have crops out in your field, and you go out to harvest time. God said, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. Wait a minute. Sometimes the corners are the best. Right? You ever eaten a pizza that had corners? It wasn't a round pizza. It's a square pizza. Sometimes the corner pieces are the best. What do you mean? You ever had lasagna? You all like the middle part of the lasagna? Are you an edge person of lasagna? Do you like the corner piece? Never mind. I don't want to know the answer to that question. But he says, you shall not reap the corners of your field. What? Nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. Is this a tithe? No, this isn't a tithe. But when it came time for them to gather in what they had, they were not to gather every bit of it. They were supposed to leave part of it for the poor. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 24. He states this again, but there's another element to this, or a little bit more specific over in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Down in verse 19, he's talking about them reaping their harvest. And for sure he told them not to reap the corners of their fields back in Leviticus. But here in Deuteronomy 24, he says, verse 19, when you reap your harvest in your field and you forget a sheaf in the field, do not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. So some gets left behind. You go to the harvest, and you ever go to do your laundry and stuff just starts falling out when you start picking up your laundry and you end up with socks all over the floor you didn't know were there? Here they go gathering their grapes, they go gathering their harvest, and stuff just starts falling out of their basket. What does God say? Leave it. What do you mean leave it there? That's a gift. That's giving to those who are in need. So we've read about them having these tithes that they were required to give by God already. And now here's these additional offerings and things that they were to do for the Lord. Look in Exodus 22. Exodus 22. Y'all getting a workout this morning? Lots of verses here. Exodus 22. And there's several other offerings that are mentioned here in Exodus 22. Look at verse 29. You shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. This isn't part of a tithe. This is giving their first fruits. And so when their produce comes in, when their harvest comes in, God says, you give the first of it. The end of verse 29, you give the firstborn of your sons. Verse 30, Some of you are saying, hey, can I give the second one too? I don't want him either. Verse 30, likewise you shall do with your oxen and your sheep. You give the first one. It shall be with its mother 7 days, and on the eighth day you shall give it to me. So here's all of these tithes that they were to be involved in. And then here, they were called upon to give their first fruits. Go to Deuteronomy 16. We're going to see something else in Deuteronomy 16. When they came time for the Feast of Weeks, an annual feast, Deuteronomy 16 and verse 9. Verse 9. Deuteronomy 16, verse 9. You shall count 7 weeks for yourself. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the grain. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. You shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, the Levite who is within your gates, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow who are among you at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. So here was something that was involved with just what being called a freewill offering. So you put all of these together. Is there perhaps some overlap between some of these offerings? Well, perhaps. But there are definitely some defined tithes that he lays out. There was the matter of giving of their first fruits. There was the matter of not gleaning the corners, not picking up the things that were dropped. And here we're reading about another freewill offering. How much did these people give? I think you could easily say that they gave at least 30%. They gave at least 30% of what they had to God. Somebody says, well, I'm glad I don't live under that law anymore. That's just a lot to have to give. We don't live under that law. We don't live under a law that says give 30%. We don't live under a law that says give 10%. But what did that verse say? Those things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. Is there anything that we should learn from this? Anything that we could learn from this? Look in the book of Proverbs. You know, there's some things that this teaches us. I think one of the things that we learn from this is that God's people are blessed when they give to God. That's not just a New Testament principle. It's an Old Testament principle too. Look in Proverbs chapter 3. Here's the wise man Solomon. Where did he get his wisdom? He get it from his mother. He went to school for a long time, right? He got it from God. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. Now, if I take what I have and I honor the Lord with it, and if I give to the Lord the first fruits of everything that I have and everything that I gain, what does verse 10 say? So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. What does that mean? So if I give to God, does that mean I'm going to be without? No, I keep giving all of this to God and boy, I don't have anything left. That's not the way it works. This says you give to God and you'll be blessed. Look in chapter 11, Proverbs 11. There's a contrast that's drawn here in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 24. There is one who scatters, yet increases more. There is one who withholds more than is right. Oh, I don't know if I want to give that much. And it leads to what? Oh, you want to keep it to yourself? Okay, keep it to yourself. It leads to poverty. Verse 25, the generous soul. How can this happen? If you're giving something away, how can you be made rich? That just doesn't work. You give, but this says the generous soul will be made rich. And he who waters will also be watered himself. There's some principles that God lays out here that says, when we give to God, are we going to be without? Are we going to be lacking in any way? No. Old Testament principles say God's going to continue to bless you. But what happens if I don't give to God as I should? Look in the book of Malachi, last book of the Old Testament. Go to Matthew and just turn back a book. When we go back and look at the history of the Jews, there's some interesting things we can see. We see about the blessings that God gives to those who give, but what if I don't give the way I should? Think about this being the last book in the Old Testament. Think about this being the last prophet of God for 400 years. This will be one of the last things that the Jews hear from God for 400 years. Would that stick in your mind? The last words of somebody, those are sometimes things that stay with us. Well, what is one of the things that God says in these last words? Malachi chapter 3, verse 8. Will a man rob God? Think about just, I know you've heard that verse before and you've heard that question. Imagine being a Jew and you heard that for the first time. Will a man rob God? Malachi, you're not very smart, are you? Malachi, why would you ask us that? Of course we wouldn't rob. Who's going to rob God? In fact, how could you rob God? You going to gunpoint? I mean, how are you going to rob God? Malachi, you've lost it. Why are you asking that kind of question? Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, what did God know? They're going to say, God, how have we robbed you? That doesn't make any sense. How had they robbed God? The end of verse 8, in tithes and offerings. God. In our tithes and offerings, we're giving to you. And when we're giving to you, how can we be robbing from you? That's like backwards. We're giving to you. How can giving to you be robbing you? That's backwards. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. How could they have been robbing God in their tithes and their offerings? Got any ideas?
It all belongs to God.
Okay.
They're not giving back to Him what they're supposed to
give. Okay. So if it all belongs to Him and I hold on to what I'm supposed to give to Him, what does God say? I'm robbing Him. So here they are in the quality of their tithes, in the quantity of their tithes, they are holding back from God, and God's view of that is, you've robbed me. But His promise is, you can make that different in verse 10. You can change that. So He says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And now test me. Try me in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such a blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. So here were ones who had held back from God, and God says, I'm going to hold you to account. I'm going to hold you to account for having held back from me, but if you will change and come back and do what you're supposed to do, I will pour out a blessing on you that you won't even be able to handle. So, how does all of this apply to us? What can we learn from the Israelites? We don't live under a law that requires us to give a tithe. The word tithe is not a New Testament word. It's not a word found in Christianity. The word tithe is back in the Old Testament. It's not something that we're bound by. So God does not require us to give a tithe. Well, as Christians, what does God require of us? God calls us to abound in our giving. He calls us to give bountifully. He calls us to give with liberality. He calls us to give as we have prospered. He calls us to do so with cheerfully, because our cheerful giving will be an expression of our love. God doesn't put a dollar amount on it. He doesn't put a percentage on it. But He puts these qualifications, these qualities, ought to be involved in how we give back to our God. But here's what I want you to think about. This lesson challenges me personally. Because I go back to the patriarchal age, and how much did they give in the patriarchal age? They gave a tenth. They gave 10%. I go to the Mosaic age, and how much did they give in the Mosaic age? They gave a tithe. They gave a tenth. They gave 10%. I live in the Christian age. Do I think I could give less? Because now I'm in the Christian age and I don't live under those ages that required a tenth? That's just something to sit and to think about. Could I give less than they gave and still be okay with God? A few other questions. They lived under a law that required it. I live under grace. Could I give less than they gave? They gave because they were commanded to give. I give as an expression of my love to God. Could I give less than they gave? Could God be pleased with me if I gave less than the Jews gave? Is there any reason that our giving should not begin? Not end, but maybe begin with a tenth and then move onward. When I look at what the Jews did and how much they gave, and then the book of Hebrews says, I'm a Christian and I live under a better covenant. I live under better promises. I have a better promise laid out for me. I have a better reward. Is it possible? Is it right that I would think about giving less? When those Jews who became Christians on the day of Pentecost, I read this in a book and I thought that's kind of interesting. Day of Pentecost, all the people who were converted were Jews. They lived under the tithe system. They lived under the system that they gave 30% to God. When they became a Christian, you think they rejoiced and said, yes, finally, I can now give less to God than I was before. I'm now a Christian. I've been saved by the blood of Jesus, and I can give less to God than I used to. Isn't that one? You think they did that? You know they didn't do that. Is it right for me to think that I give less? Their liberality challenges me. Can I give more? Can I do more? And remember, this starts, and it maybe not starts, this includes our bank account. This includes what's in our checking account. This includes what's in our billfold, but that's not all. It included everything they had. But it certainly should include everything we have too. I hope some of this has helped you this morning. I'm sorry that bell has rung and we've got to stop. But thank you so much for your attention this morning.